If you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
We missed you, Randy. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll call the meeting to order, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Gendron.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Gass.
Here.
Trustee Dennis is absent. Are there any proposed modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there anyone here who would like to see an agenda item moved up or down? The cops and the firefighters are going to have to duke it out to see who goes first.
He's got a gun.
Hearing no suggested modifications, is there a motion to adopt the agenda as submitted? Trustee Harris, second. Trustee Genrich, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Are there any announcements this evening? Yes.
I do have one announcement. Chris Clark is with us tonight. Chris is the new Park and Rec Forestry Director. Started on Monday, but I would like Chris, if you wouldn't mind taking a couple minutes to introduce yourself and to the board.
I'd like to thank Brad and thank the Village of Alloway for offering me a great opportunity for my career. I have in the past about 11 and a half years worked at the Village of Howard in the Parks and Forestry department over there. My wife and family and I, we live in Kaukauna. My wife is a nurse leader at St. Elizabeth Hospital in Appleton, and so we kind of live in between the Green Bay area and the Appleton area, and really enjoyed in the valley. And I'm really looking forward to like I said, this next step in my career, and I really thank Brad for giving me this opportunity, and also working with Ford. Yeah.
Good course. Good close.
Welcome, Chris. We're really happy to have you on our team. Any other announcements? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 4A, a presentation from the Green Bay Fire Department.
Good evening, everyone. It's always an honor to come and speak before the board. I usually get out at least a couple times a year. What I have done this evening is just put together a report of some things that hopefully you will find interesting. If you do, and if you have questions about any item as I'm getting to it, feel free to ask at that time or when I'm done, however that works out best for you. I've provided you with basically a report, a written report, and then some data. And all of the data is year-to-date as of last week. I put this all together last week, so everything is current up through probably about the 26th of November, but is reflective of how the rest of the year will play out. So I guess the first thing I was going to talk about this evening is just we got through the budget process. I'm sure you similarly just went through your budget process. So just to talk about a few things that came out of that. There were some needs that we had equipment-wise, and we were able to address most of those. So turnout gear, we try to rotate our turnout gear. The standard is that you flip your turnout gear every 5 years, and additionally, we want all of our firefighters to have an adequate backup set of turnout gear, so if they incur a fire, get carcinogens, whatever, in their turnout gear, while it's being cleaned, they have adequate gear to wear to the next call. So by this amount of money, we're able to continue that program, and we buy about 40 sets a year, and that allows us to have everybody with current frontline gear and backup gear. SCBA is the breathing apparatus that we wear. Similarly, that has a standard that you never should have equipment that is more than 2 updates old, and so we are able to maintain that by spending approximately $70,000 a year on replacing breathing apparatus. So that's what that's all about. Radios, we just need to continue to update with the radio upgrade that happened about a year and a half ago in the county. We just have some need to have some additional radios that have the broadband capability to communicate. The thermal imaging cameras is the heat-sensitive camera that we use when we go into fire. Willis for a long time, but the technology has improved, and we want to have the more current equipment. So what we're going to do is each year we're going to buy, every time we order a fire truck, we're going to equip it with one, so that will be one, and then we'll additionally buy one more, and that way we'll be able to keep all of our inventory of cameras as current as possible. The Zodiac is our fast water rescue for example, retention ponds, East River, somebody's in the water, something happens, where we can run to the scene before guys can grab this thing, throw it in the water, and get somebody out. The one that we have now is about 12 years old, and it's starting to fail. So it's an inflatable. We're going to replace it with another inflatable, but a little heavier duty. We'll have a hard floor, but it's still something that the weight can be managed by four firefighters, that we can get in and make a quick rescue. That's probably been a need for a couple of years, so we're happy to get that funded. Gear washers and dryers, we started this program last year. Chief Litton is very big on keeping the gear clean and keeping the carcinogens out of the gear. So this year we bought one washer, three dryers. We had already had washers in three stations, so that gives us four. And we will fund again one more washer and two more dryers, and we'll keep that program going until every station has a washer and a dryer. And the reason that gear dryers or gear washers are different than anybody else's washer is that there's a specific way to wash turnout gear that you don't deteriorate the gear through the cleaning process, and it has to do with pH levels of the detergents and all those types of things, and temperatures of the water and all that stuff. So they don't give these things away, but to buy the right gear washer, it pays off in the long term in the durability and the longevity of your gear. So we're happy to continue with that program. Technical rescue gear, we do all kinds of trench rescue, confined space rescue, those kind of things. Those guys have always sort of been out on the side, not getting a lot of money for their needs. There are some specific types of wear that they should have on when they do those processes, and we're able to get some money to fund that. So we're happy with all of those things. I think they meet needs and allow us to provide a better service to the community. Power cots. One of the biggest causes of workman's comp-related injuries in the EMS business is lifting. And so we decided last year, Chief Litton felt that we had gone long enough without taking advantage of the fact that these were out there. So we spent $90,000 and equipped all of our ambulances with power cots. So now the crews no longer have to lift the heavy person up. The cot will rise up to the back to the level of the ambulance, and we just roll the patient in and roll the patient out. It's better for our guys, and it's certainly going to help us keep workman's comp costs down. We will buy one more next year to be a backup, so that our reserve apparatus have power cots. We have a big year for retirements coming on. We've got 15 people that are committed to go. We've got 12 letters in already, but we've got 15 people that have indicated that they have every intention of retiring. So just want to kind of let you know what we do about that and how we prepare for that. It's not something that we didn't see coming. We've known for about a year and a half that this was coming. You go through cycles like this. 25 years ago, we hired a bunch of people. They've got their 25 years in, so it kind of goes that way. It's not really related to anything specific other than they're all of retirement age and they all decided to go. But we saw it coming, and so in addition to the normal officer development training that we always have, we've kind of amped that up a little bit over the last year and made sure that we spent a lot of time on tactics, on personnel, on leadership, preparing the next group of officers that are going to be coming up. So we also administer the State of Wisconsin Officer 1 curriculum to all of our people, all the way through the ranks of engineers. So even people that are 5 years out on promotions have already gone through that training and become certified as state fire officers. And then, of course, we budget for individuals to go to the National Fire Academy, and they can apply for that, and whatever courses are available they can take, and we'll fund that and get that out there. Just to reassure everybody, the average person we're promoting to captain has 21 years on, and the average lieutenant has 18 years on. So these aren't new people. They're just we've seen that they're well-trained, and we have absolute confidence that, and we're actually kind of excited about some of the energy that they bring. When you lose 15 people, you're losing experience, and you're losing some wisdom. But on the other end of that, we're excited about some of the new energy and some of the stuff that's coming. So I think it's a good thing.
Excuse me.
Sure.
We're losing 15. What's the total staff member?
We have 177 personnel on the line. That's 59 per shift, and then 20 administration supports for 197 total.
Thank you.
So the other end of losing people is hiring people. We I mean, I may or may not have explained this to you guys in the past, but we have a contract with Fox Valley Technical School to for the initial part of our hiring process. And what that means is that anyone that wants to work in any of the regional fire departments, anywhere from Oshkosh, Appleton, Manitowoc, Holloway, Green Bay, they all apply through Fox Valley Technical School. They take their fitness train or their fitness certification there. They take a written test there, and they take a personality dynamics type of a test. And then the technical school forwards all that information to us with a list of qualified applicants. So this year we got 66 qualified people that wanted to work for Green Bay Fire and met our qualifications. Now, we don't have the time or the ability to interview 66 people inadequately. It would get too muddy. So the chief and I developed a set of metrics last year where we take their personality scores, and we look at the ones that we feel are the most important to our people in our fire department. And we stress respect for authority, ability to work with other people, not being self-focused, things like that. And we set up a way that we sorted the applicants, and then we interviewed the top 28. And out of that, some have already taken other jobs. A couple of them we really weren't thrilled with. We've got 18 people left that are going through background checks. Hopefully they all pass, and we've got an eligibility list of 18 people. So the level of candidate that we're getting since we started this process is very good. We were thrilled. Last year we hired 7 people. They're all great. I think this arrangement with Fox Valley was good. What it has done is it has given us better candidates, but it's also made the process more competitive because every other fire department in the region is looking at the same people. And so we have had to kind of push HR a little bit to let these people know that we want them before somebody else calls. And we lost one last year, and I just had a conversation today that one of the guys that we really want to hire is already got an offer from somebody else, and so I'm hoping that we can indicate to him that we want him because he would be a great asset. So it's more competitive, but we're getting great people. We also, at this time, recently lost Chief Melissa Spielman. She was our EMS director. I'm not aware of any of you have met her or not, but she did an outstanding job, but she's moved on to county emergency management, so her experience and her abilities are still with us in the emergency management field, but it left us an opening at division chief, and we're having a little bit of a challenge filling that job right now, so I'll keep you guys updated, but I'm not quite sure where we're going to go. It's one of those positions where coming into administration is not always necessarily desirable for all of the people that are represented. I don't know how to be more specific than that, but going from a represented union job to an exempt job that works 50 or 60 hours a week, not a lot of people want to do it. So we hope to fill that soon. What we've done at this point is split her duties between 3 of us, and we're taking care of as much as we can, but certainly we can't do everything that she was doing. So we hope that within the next few weeks we can find some solution to that. The data that I've provided for you, I just took a few different things that I thought would be interesting to talk about. So the first one, the very first page, is all the calls in the village up to this point this year. So it kind of shows you that primarily we're in the EMS business. 12 fires, 687 EMS calls, pretty much the standard breakdown. The same, you can see the same percentages in the city. I did want to just address some of the big fires, even though they didn't happen in the village. All the crews ended up there, so Preble High School, everybody heard about that. That was over $7 million, and what happened there was that the fire started in the gymnasium. Improper disposal of finishing rags, of chemical-induced rags. And so the fire was not huge, but the smoke damage was what really ran us into a large amount of money. So biggest loss that we'd had in quite some time. Lack cold storage was an ammonia leak. If anybody paid more than they usually pay for their turkey this year, I can tell you that's because the Super Value used this building for storage and lost millions of dollars of turkeys. So NWTC maintenance garage was just about a month ago. They had trucks, bulldozers, dump trucks. They lost a whole bunch of equipment. It appears due to being a short on a battery charger. And then Procter & Gamble, we've been there twice, and we were just there recently Sunday and again yesterday for paper machine fires, and they were pretty substantial. So those are always our toughest calls because they're not burning buildings. They're fire chasing through ducts and plenums and things in paper machines that are very hard to get to. So it's a challenge for us. And you know, we did. You probably read that we got a guy hurt yesterday. He got burned on his hands a little bit. We don't know the nature of his injuries. He'll be okay, but you know, we don't ever want to see anybody hurt, and we'll address the issues about why that happened and try to make sure it doesn't happen again. So, any questions on the fire data? And the next thing that I put together is the run data, and what I was just trying to show here is every unit that we've got running in the city, how many calls they go on, how long it takes them to get out the door, what their average response time is, and about how long those calls last. So the only thing that I would point out is when you, and you can look at all this data later, if you have questions, you can always call me, because I don't expect you to absorb it all in a minute and a half, but the only thing I would caution you is when you look at the on-scene times, those are warped by those 14-hour fires. So a 14-hour fire is going to make the on-scene time look a lot higher than it is normally for a call. An ambulance call, we don't usually sit in anyone's house for 37 minutes. So, but basically, it's just interesting data that I thought you might want to take a look at. It kind of shows you, you know, who's going on the runs. The next one, what I did there is I just took the ambulance calls, and of the five ambulances, I just kind of showed you how many calls everybody goes on. Now, turnout time is the time that it takes from dispatch center telling us there's a call till we go out the door. Now, in the dispatching process, the first thing that happens is somebody calls them. Somebody dials 911. They answer the phone. Now, they have a process they have to go through to decide whose call that is. Is that a county call? Is that a Green Bay Fire call? Is it a Green Bay Police call? Whose call is it? And that process takes a minute to a minute and a half, and then we get the call. So the call, from the time they tell us to go until the time we go, is turnout time. The standard that we try to maintain on that is 90 seconds. And generally, the 90 seconds is an average between day and night. During the day, when my guys are up and around, I expect them to get out the door in a minute. And at night, it's a little more challenging. We got to get up, get their gear on, stuff like that. So 2 minutes on the outside is what we're looking for, and that's how we arrive at a 90-second average. You can see that we're well under that, so we're doing a good job getting out the door. Response time is a little bit reflective of the districts. So when you look at that, and you'll see, for example, that Ambulance 5 has a longer response time. Ambulance 5 is an area of town where their calls are farther from their station on average. Some people, Ambulance 6, for example, runs to Military Avenue a lot. It's a minute away. So their call, their response time might be a little bit lower. Ambulance 5's response district tends to average out farther, so they're going to see a larger response time. It doesn't mean they're slower. It just means they have a different type of a district. Ambulance 3 is in an older part of town. Their calls tend to be a little closer. So I can look at those numbers, and I don't see anything wrong. What I see is what is exactly representative of the district that they work in. On scene times, same kind of thing, and transport times, and you'll notice that Ambulance 8 is going to have the shortest transport time. Well, that's because the hospitals are already here. So there's nothing out of the ordinary in any of these numbers. It just kind of gives you a look at what we're doing and how we're doing it.
How does it compare for Alloway versus or prior to the merger? Are we still
I don't really have any data on that. Brad and I were talking about that earlier today, and I believe what he indicated was that it was favorable versus a prior merger. You know, the station's in the same place. There's not a lot of reason why it should take us less or more time to get to a call with our first unit. But what we have done by staffing with six and having an engine and ambulance is that when that second call comes in, when the first guys are out, there's a second unit sitting right here on Dauphin that can respond. So that response time is going to be better. So those secondary calls, which happen quite a bit, you're going to see a quicker time there. So that's going to play into this average. But otherwise, we shouldn't be any quicker or slower than in the past.
And part of that question will be answered in the next metric with how they're doing relative to the standards that were established in the contract.
Yeah, let's turn to that, and I'll explain to you how I do this. So by contract, I am to report to you anytime that the ambulance call, an emergency ambulance call, is longer than 8 minutes. So what I have is I have an automatic report built by our software people that get our EMS data, and they said I can open this report 10 times a day if I want to, and it tells me every call, when it happened, what the run number was, and what the time was. And then I take those calls, and then I open up the call, and I read the narrative, and I find out what happened on this call. And What I found out was of the 16 out of the, I mean, 2% is an incredible, rate. I'm proud to give you these kind of numbers. I think we're doing great. But what I found out on the 16 calls, half of those calls were that Station 8 was already on a call in the village. So now Station 2 or Station 5 responded. So that's certainly expected that, if they're already busy, they're already busy. You know, and I think that, the situation now is better than it was when, we weren't here. So that's not a problem. A couple of these were highway responses where they get up on the highway and they got to go back and forth to get to the right side of the highway to get to the accident. So we're there, we're close, but we got to find the accident. And when I find, anytime I find a call that I can't explain what happened, then I contact the crew and I ask the crew for a report. I want to know what happened. And they'll report to me. And one of the calls that occurred in this particular report was there was a 9-minute response time and I wanted to know why. So I called up the crew and I said, I got to know what happened here. And as it turned out, it was a police standby. So we're there, but the police are saying, don't come in yet. And now I could have told my guy, just hit the button that you're here, and then I won't have this problem. But they didn't hit the button because they didn't feel like they were there yet. So we were on scene in plenty of time. We just didn't say so because we were being asked to hold back. So those are the kind of things I find. But I just want you guys to understand that I analyze this constantly, and I need answers whenever we don't meet these, and that's what we promised, and that's what we're doing. So any other questions?
Go ahead, please.
I was just going to discuss this particular instance, what is SOP? For them to push the button because they're on scene, or is SOP to wait until they are allowed in by the police officer?
There really isn't one, because I guess if I was to advise them, which I did, I said next time push the button, because technically you have arrived where you were asked to be. And so it just skews the data more than anything else. And occasionally we run into problems with our technology. In the rigs, what the guys have is a touch screen, and they hit the touch screen and they say, I'm on my way, and they hit the touch screen and say, I'm there. It doesn't always work, but I don't want my officers sitting there staring at their computer to see if it worked or not. I want them to hit it and get out and go. So occasionally I'll find one that'll turn out to be a technological issue that they were there the whole time, and I can tell that by looking at the other rig on the call. And if the other rig was there 3 minutes earlier, I know these guys run together. I know they were there, so I know it was just a tech problem, and I don't get too upset about it.
Thank you.
We had a number of metrics that are in the contract. I don't remember the specifics of them either. But if I remember correctly, it was some of these metrics were a little bit long. It was that you has to be under a certain amount of response time, a certain percentage of calls, and then nothing over
right.
Something.
What it says is that on EMS calls, within 6 minutes, 90% of the time, but I'm to report to you if it takes longer than 8.
And that's what this is, the longer than 8?
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
I can run the data on the 6. And get it to you, that way it wouldn't be a problem. I run it this way so I know what I specifically have to answer to.
Right.
But I can run it any way I want to, but I'm pretty comfortable that we would hit the 90 as well on the 6 minutes.
Okay. That would make sense that as we're wrapping up the end of we're wrapping up the anniversary of the agreement, right? We signed in December.
We did.
So at this time of year that we get information about the entire maybe calendar year, and did we meet that 90%?
Sure. And what I can do is I can prepare that, and I can send it to you, and you can distribute it, because I can't send it to all of you because that's a meeting.
Right, that's fine. You can send it to Brad.
Sure. I'll send it to Brad, and he can distribute it. So I will work on that for you.
And then I'm wondering about one of the initial apprehensions, if you recall, was the southeast part of the village and our inability to get there in a reasonable amount of time from where the firehouse is, and whether that would be improved or not improved, considering that those firefighters might be out on another call. And so I'm wondering, do you have these data broken down by area in the village?
I can pull them by district. There are actually 4 Alloway districts.
There are?
Yes. Because Station 8, technically, one of Station 8's response district is Green Bay. So I always pull that out of the report. I don't count that. So there's, because you guys are 8, it's APD, ABD, and CD. So I can break it down by district. I can tell you that we're still challenged to get to the southeast corner of the village, and in this 2% is a couple of those.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as being a recurrent problem. I see it happening occasionally, and I don't really know, other than a different location, I don't know how you get around that.
Right, and I'm not suggesting that there's a perfect solution for it, but I kind of want to know whether it's happening. So if all of this 2% is coming from that part of the
building. No, it isn't. I think two of them were.
Okay. So could you break, is it easy enough for you to break these data down by districts, the four districts that are in Alloway, and then that 90% metric, 6 minutes, under 6 minutes, 90% of the time, is that the metric, if that could be broken down by the four districts?
I'll do that. I'll get it to you.
Thank you. Can you tell me where the district boundaries are about?
I'd have to look at a map again.
Okay.
It's pretty much two on each side of the highway.
Okay. When you send those data along to Brad, do you think you could have someone just draw it out on a map or something?
Oh, I have it on a map. I just don't have it with me.
Okay. Can you send that to Brad as well?
Sure.
Thank you. Any other questions about this? Yeah, Trustee Rafter.
These numbers, these are just for Alloway? So the 887 total incidents?
Yes.
Just for Alloway?
Yes. Okay. And I can run the same report for the whole city. I this time I broke this one down specifically for the village. I thought you'd be more interested in that, but I can do it either way. And anytime, if there are specific things that you want me to bring in the next time that you'd like me to come in, if you give me a heads up, I can identify that and bring in exactly the kind of report you're looking for. I kind of just wing it here a little bit and try to come up with stuff that I think will be relevant.
I'm most interested in the what's in the contract and whether or not we're meeting those metrics, and then broken down by area to see if there's any particular one problem
sure.
area. I mean, that's where my mind goes automatically since we took so long to determine what those would be.
And one of the things I want to just mention too is that there are certain times when training requires us to pull guys out of their stations. We do it in our districts. We do it everywhere. There are certain types of training that can't be done in-house. And we are very conscious of our obligation to the village. And so I have directed my battalion chiefs to ensure that there's never an empty station sitting here. I mean, it just happens. What we do in Green Bay is if we take the most far-reaching station out, we may swing somebody out there, whatever. So what we do in the village is we don't ever train the whole crew out of house at the same time. We'll pull the engine in the morning, we'll pull the ambulance in the afternoon, we'll do something like that. If we have a type of training that really requires crew integrity, I'll swing another unit down here. So we do everything that we can do to keep the coverage, and that's a process that we do in the city as well. We don't move everybody to one side of town and hope nothing happens. We always right. adjust our resources accordingly and try to cover everything.
And that's why I keep going back to the metrics, that whatever it is, you're the professionals, whatever you guys think of to make sure that the response times are appropriate, go at it. For me, the proof is in the pudding, and if we're not meeting those metrics, then we have to look closer as to why we aren't and then figure out a way to fix it. So I always go back to the metrics that were outlined in the contract. So whenever you come and visit us, that's what I'll be looking for.
Okay. And I apologize for not doing it that way, but like I was saying, there's two things in there. One says report on and one says meet, so I report on the 8 minute because that's...
Yeah.
But I can get you out really easy.
Yeah.
I'll work on that for you.
Yeah, no, you had no way of knowing that.
Okay. I'm sorry, you're not finished? Oh, wait.
I just said one other thing. With the last thing that I added on here that I just thought you might find interesting is just the inspection data. Part of our job is to inspect any and all buildings that are accessible by the public. So we have a fire marshal's office of three guys, and then we also have in-service inspections, which is all of our line people that go out and inspect when time permits. And so over 5,500 site visits is what's identified. And I did do this both ways. I've got the metro data, but then I've also got the village data just so you can kind of see what's going on there. Our direction to the crews is to get their work done by the end of September every year so that we have 3 months to clean up, follow-ups, guys that weren't in compliance, things like that, and then to put all our information together and get it to the state because we have to forward all that data to the state. So this just kind of gives you an idea of what's going on there. One of the things that I was kind of excited to hear is that you guys are hiring a building inspector. I guess he's going to work part-time with water, but we have a very close relationship with our building department because a lot of the times what we find might be a hazard but might not be our jurisdiction. It might be a building issue, and so we work tightly with those guys. So we're looking forward to having a relationship with your building guy and being able to address certain problems that we might see in a fire inspection but aren't necessarily fire relate, you know, I mean, we don't have the jurisdiction to say it's wrong. We just, we know it's bad. So we'll talk to the other guy and somehow we'll figure out how to address it. So we look forward to meeting that new person. And that is all I have. So if you have other questions.
Okay. It's a little specific, but there was a fire sometime in the last year over on Longview and Libel. I think that's not Libel, but East River.
East River.
Are you familiar with that? It was a house that burned and the garage was completely...
I remember the call. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, that's in the southeast corner of the village, and I'm wondering if maybe that fire did the damage it did because of where it's located.
As I recall, we were there pretty quickly on that one. I think time of day was a part of the problem on that one, too, is that it just... If fires aren't identified for, there are certain times of day when fires come in that you know they're going to be bad because nobody's driving around looking at them. And, you know, the early morning fires are bad. You know, when people at work, sometimes things get going. There's times of day when fires get identified earlier. I think that one was going quite well when we got there, but as I remember listening to the call, I think we were there pretty quick.
Okay.
And there was kind of a history with that property.
Okay.
Might have contributed to that.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
Sure.
As long as we were talking about the southeast corner. Just one last question. What challenges do you see for the fire department, the biggest challenges over the next year? As it relates to Alloway or the whole
area? Well, it's very important that we get this EMS position filled, and I don't know how long that's going to take. What we're facing is a problem where administrative jobs are not attractive to the local. Their pay scale is such that a lieutenant or a captain is not going to take a division chief position because he'll lose money, and I don't think that's right. That's a fact. They'll lose money, they're exempt, and they work 50 or 60 hours a week. It's a problem that needs to be addressed, and it's been made clear to the city for some time that this was coming, that it was going to happen, that we're going to have a job and nobody was going to want it, and now we're there, and now I'm interested to see how it gets responded to, because it's a problem. I don't blame the guys for not wanting to do it. Nobody's stupid. I mean, you come up in here and you do these jobs because you feel like you can make a difference, you can contribute, but is that worth $15,000 a year pay cut? No, it isn't. You know, I mean, this is a $21 million corporation, and the four people at the top of it should be making less money than all the people out there working around. But I know there's nothing you can do about that, but that's the bottom line. So you asked. I think that's a huge problem. If we can't get quality people to come up and run the departments, we have a problem. So I really think that's probably our biggest challenge. I mean, we're going to have a training academy of anywhere from 10 to 15 people, but we're adequately prepared for that. We've known that was coming. We've got a very nice template for our academy, and I think that'll go well. I think we're ready to do that. So really that's our biggest challenge is replacing people and having quality people in the administrative divisions.
That's a pretty serious problem. How did that happen? How does it happen in an organization where...
Well, the union has the right to bargain, and so they can bargain whatever raises they're able to bargain. The rest of us are on the administrative pay scale. If you have a city council that doesn't respect management and says, let's not give them anything this year, and you do that for 2 or 3 years, this is what happens. And basically that's where we're at. And the issue is presented, and all it takes is action. But there hasn't been a willingness to solve the problem.
Interesting. You mentioned something before. What a lot of people don't realize is that in addition to the fire and EMS services that are working so well, I think for all of us, the inspections and the training were another huge factor in this merger a few years back, and that we were falling behind on inspections. We weren't doing them, I don't think, as well as we could have, and the training wasn't nearly as good as it is now. So in addition to all of the, you know, the response times and the protection that you get by having a whole community of backup, those are two elements I think are really important that we get lost in the discussion.
Right. And I can tell you that our training division has never been in better hands. Division Chief Elliott has had a year now in that division, It's more organized. It's more laid out. There's a plan. We're not making stuff up as we go. There's an annual training plan. These are the things we're going to address. This is how we're going to get to it. I mean, we're all excited about it. We've never been better at training. And so I'm happy to say that to you, and I think everybody's reaping the benefit of that.
One thing I'd like you to think about as we approach a new calendar year is disaster planning and the role of municipalities in carrying out and or developing and carrying out plans for disaster management. I think I was trained in it long before the merger, and it wasn't terribly in-depth training, and I'm in no way prepared to help in much of any way if a disaster should occur in Alloway. And I think that's probably not a responsible position to be in, both as a board and as staff. So any help that you, and I know we have people with that expertise in the community, some of them at the university that would be able to lend a hand, I think, but I don't know how much expertise or training that you get in the fire department, but some of that I think would be helpful to our community.
Sure. All right. I'll see what I can do to address that for you.
Thank you. Anything else for Chief? Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Presentation from the Brown County Sheriff's Department.
Good evening. First of all, take an opportunity to introduce myself. I'm Todd Delane. I'm the Chief Deputy of the Brown County Sheriff's Office. And as the Chief Deputy, I am the person who monitors the contract with the Village of Alloway, as well as the other contracts that we have from three other municipalities. My role at the Sheriff's Office is I am appointed by the Sheriff, and all five division directors report to me. For those who don't know, I'll give you a little bit of background because there was a question about the Green Bay Metro fire. So the Brown County Sheriff's Office, we currently have about 320 employees. We have about 150 police officers, 144 civilian correctional officers. So they're primarily at 3030 Curry Lane, which is our main jail over the northeast part of the city, and the rest of them are downtown, and that's our work release center. The sheriff's office also has about 20 or so civilian employees, a total of a little over 320 employees total. Our annual operating budget is about $36 million a year, so that gives me a lot of headaches, let's just say that.
Well, we'd be happy not to give you as much as a pain for you.
Having too much money.
Within the Sheriff's Office, we have five distinct divisions. The two primary divisions that would spend the most amount of time with the village would be our patrol division and our investigative division. One of the divisions that does a lot of work that really goes unseen is our support services division. Our support services division handles all of the records. They also handle all of the other civil processes that may occur within the county. So whether it be foreclosures on homes, where the house is going into foreclosure and is being ordered to be sold by the sheriff, by a judge for the sheriff to sell it, and many other processes like that. We have a professional standards division. Professional standards handles our internal affairs as well as all of the hiring that we do. We have been fortunate in the fact that we really don't have much turnover. Typically speaking, when we hire a police officer, that police officer typically never leaves to go anywhere else. We are not an agency where somebody's hired and then gains experience and go somewhere else. That just really doesn't happen with us. And I think that's a combination of a few things. One is the opportunities within the sheriff's office because of its size. Some flexibility. They may have a desire to work in the village of Alloway and or another village or out in the county, or they might want some variety where they work in the village for several years or a village for several years and then go somewhere else for a year or two and come back. So the variety and the opportunities, I think, are what dictates that. But once again, it's as Chief Neff said, it's also about the starting, when people started, and if you had a large group of individuals that started and they're at the retirement age, we would have a lot more turnover. But for the last several years, we probably only have about 5 hires a year. So it's been small in the law enforcement section of it. Corrections, we have more turnover. Some of that is related to the fact that many of them gain experience as a correctional officer, and then they had a desire to be a police officer, and maybe they started out a little bit young. And so they got their education, and maybe they're 22, 23 years old, and they don't have a lot of life experience or dealing with the criminal element. They take a job in corrections. They get a little bit more experience if they work for us. In fact, we have two individuals right now that are in our field training program, and they were correctional officers for us before. So they reapply. We know their work ethic. We know a lot about them. And then they make the transition to the police officer side of it and then start the training there. The last division is obviously our jail division, and that's a big portion of what we do. Anyone gets arrested, whether in Brown County, they end up there for a period of time. Many of them are there for a couple months. However, the average is just over 30 days. Most people that are in the Brown County Jail are in for 33 days, I think, is right around the average before they are released. However, some of them will spend 12 months to 18 months, depending on how long their case goes in the courts. And if they are being held on a high cash bond, they can't post or no bond at all, they will stay in the custody of the sheriff until the case is resolved. And then in many of those cases, those individuals end up going to the state prison system and could end up certainly in Alloway, depending on the offense. At the Green Bay Correctional Institution, which is a state institution and is not under our authority. So that is a little bit about the Sheriff's Office. We have a lot of different specialty units within the Sheriff's Office, and Chief Neff and I are on the executive board for the Brown County Fire Investigation Task Force. So Mike and I have the privilege of seeing each other on a regular basis to deal with that. And the issue with the fire in Alloway, I know that to be an arson, the one that you talked about on the southeast side. Mm-hmm. And I think actually Deputy Lapnow is familiar with that situation with that. So during that, we review cases where we send out fire investigators to review fires that occur. The Brown County Fire Investigation Task Force is made up of law enforcement officers and firefighters throughout Brown County. Primarily, most of the investigators are either from the Brown County Sheriff's Office or from the Green Bay Fire, Metro Fire, make up the vast majority of all the investigators. And they respond anywhere to any suspected or suspicious fire to look and determine whether or not what the origin of the fire is and cause. We have many other units, including SWAT-type tactical units, crowd control-type units, certainly have boats for the bay. The sheriff is responsible for the Bay of Green Bay once you pass the Fox River and you enter by statute, basically from the Door County line all the way to the O'Connell County line. The sheriff is responsible. And in fact, if you were at Red River Park in Kewaunee County, once you step in the water, you're back in Brown County. So we deal with any issues with the water, and we get assistance from wherever we can, whether it be the Coast Guard. At times we may need the Green Bay Police Department, Green Bay Fire, but we have several boats to address that, including an airboat that has the ability to go out on ice, very thin ice, even if it breaks through, no problem. Has a Kevlar bottom on it so that we can do rescues out on frozen water if we need to. Mostly I want to say, if anyone on the village board has any interest at all in coming out to the sheriff's office, please let me know. I can show you around the sheriff's office, whether it be the sheriff's office right here, or if it's a certain part of the sheriff's office, whether it be the jail or the work release center. We also handle all the security for the courthouse, main courthouse downtown. So if there's any interest in seeing any of that, please let me know, and I would certainly accommodate any of that. Couple things I wanted to talk about, and I know Brad asked me to talk about the contract. First and foremost, I meet with the direct enforcement officers for all of the villages every month. And the primary reason for doing that is so that I know what is going on in each village, right from the person who's getting that information, who's out on the street. This meeting allows for us to coordinate efforts, as well as often what we learn is that what is occurring in the village of Bellevue is probably occurring in Alloway anyway, or in the city of Green Bay. And by having that coordination, we can talk about ideas to resolve some of these issues, or if something's occurred somewhere else and they found a way to resolve that problem, we can have that open communication so that that information gets passed back and forth, what worked and what didn't work, so that we can resolve the problem more quickly. What you should be receiving every month from Deputy Lapnow is the Village Alloway Police Report, and he'll typically have some notes on it about occurrences, and then there will be a chart with most of the activity. One of the other things that he produces monthly is the Alloway Watch News. And I know that he also once again coordinates with the Green Bay Fire and receives information. There's a section he puts in on the Green Bay Metro Fire Department and Alloway Station, some information for the residents. And then there's a section that details any of the calls. And I would encourage you, if you have any questions whatsoever about any of the incidents in here, that you can contact Deputy Lapnow, and he will provide you as much information he can about that. And if you're not satisfied with the answer that you receive there, you certainly can call me, and I will help you out any way I can to get that information. Understand that at times there could be a situation where there's a case that's still under investigation where we may not be able to provide all the information because it could hinder the prosecution of it. And that's where most of the issues come up with us, where it's the release of information. We'll get very once we turn the case over to the district attorney typically does not want us talking about the case until the case is resolved in court. So, but general terms, most often we'll be able to help you out with any of the information that you may be in need of. So I wanted to talk about what's occurred in the last 11 months or so. However, keep in mind that, as indicated earlier, at the end of the year, Deputy Lapnow will do the end-of-year report. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on calls, because what I noticed is that, for the most part, the calls have been very consistent. I looked so far just, you know, a couple quick examples how close and consistent things have been, that between January of 2013 and January and November of 2014, like the number of alarms in the village of Alloway, in 2013, in that 11-month period, there were 114. I'm sorry, in 2013. In 2014, there were 110. So, and I looked through, and many of the calls are very, very similar. Burglaries, 2013-24, 2014-23. So within one. One of the things that we have noticed is that we've had an increase in the number of traffic crashes. However, I will tell you that the number of traffic crashes with injury remains steady, and it's very, very low in Alloway. In 2013, we had 10 crashes with injury in that 11-month period. This year, we've had 8. So it's very, very minimal. However, the total number of crashes in 2014 is approaching already 340, where last year we were at about 275 during the same time frame. And Deputy Lopnow has been looking at this, and we're finding that a lot of these crashes are have been on Webster Avenue. And it seems to be a lot of maybe not paying attention issues, rear-ending issues, stuff like that.
Have you seen a similar increase in other municipalities?
No, I haven't.
More people are texting, or more people from our generation are finally getting smartphones and they're texting while they're driving or doing other things that distract themselves? Or is this
the wrong kind notes. Of...
Don't even say it. Strike that from the record, please. So are you seeing similar increases in other municipalities, or is this just an Alloway thing?
I haven't seen this specific, although I haven't looked that closely to see if it's on a busy street. And what I'm concerned here is maybe some of the stuff that you just indicated, because of the... Webster Avenue being so busy, it can be a combination of things. And actually, Deputy Lopnow and I were talking about that, and he's going to be looking a little bit further into it, whether to determine if it's related to the weather or if it's just inattentiveness. We've noticed a large number of crashes in the area of Webster and 172.
Yeah. The yield sign continues to be a problem.
The what?
The yield sign from southbound Webster Avenue to 172 West.
West, right.
That's a consistent place where we have crashes. So we're talking about who do we need to contact at the state level to see what we can do.
Okay.
So that is one of the things that he is going to be looking at, because that's not a trend that we like to see. So he's going to monitor that. Work with the state, because the state does the signing there. We've talked about increasing some visibility of that yield sign, whatever we can to try to reduce the number of rear-end crashes that we have in that area. I know it's difficult. It drops downhill a little bit. Maybe people don't realize they're going as fast. Times they stop at the yield, they think the car went, and then they end up rear-ending the car there, seen that numerous times, and then we end up down at the accident
pullover
just down from there. So the good news is the number of accidents with injury have decreased. However, we're seeing more crashes. One of the other things that Deputy Lopnow and I talked about to handle some of that is As you're aware, we spend a tremendous amount of time in Alloway dealing with quality of life issues, including speed, crime prevention, and stuff like that. I think it would be a good idea, based on the statistics, to look at really focusing some traffic efforts on Webster because it is busy, whether that be monitoring the traffic lights, so we would send our traffic team here to assist him, and watch for those individuals who might be going through on yellows or red lights to try to address that and really draw attention to Webster. So I will have Deputy Lopnow do a little bit more work into that issue and then address it with the board or make you aware of what the plan is. But we're going to develop a plan to address this through making the community aware of the increase in crashes there, maybe through the newsletter, and then make people aware that that they're going to be in the area. So if speed is an issue, we'll look at slowing some people down on Webster Avenue, even though it's kind of a difficult thing to do because it is so congested. And when you have numerous cars going fast, it makes it dangerous for us to get out there to try to even get them slowed down. But maybe some presence in the area and some proactive enforcement in that area might help to bring awareness to that and try to get them to slow down. Other than that, certainly at the end of the year, you'll get a list of all of the calls for service. One thing I think it's important to mention, if you look at the newsletter, what we find not, what we found, and this is not something that is just specific to Alloway, this is throughout Brown County. We have an increase number of, or it may be consistent, but it is a problem in the fact that it accounts for a high percentage of the number of our thefts or burglaries. And that is, if you look even at the September newsletter, it is theft after theft, and it's oftentimes unlocked vehicle. I look at the top list here, theft of a vehicle plate, the second one, unlocked vehicle, third one, unlocked vehicle. This one is an open garage door, which would make it a burglary. So these thefts, and then once it's an open garage door and they go into somebody's garage, it changes the classification from a theft to a burglary. So when you see some of the burglaries, doesn't necessarily mean they were going into the residence. I look at some of the other calls that we went through, and I saw that there was at least one incident where somebody pulled down a door while somebody was in there to see if it was unlocked. Had it been unlocked, they probably would have went in. Captain Schultz has been with our sheriff's office 31 years. It's like his pet peeve, and he cannot get it out enough to say, to the community, please lock your doors. And I think we continue to stress that if your vehicle's in the driveway and you have anything of value in it, the thieves that we see are opportunists, and they go around, either they get just dropped off in an area, and they go and just check all the cars in a certain neighborhood that are outside to see whether or not they're locked. If they're unlocked, they go through the car and take whatever it is of value. And believe it or not, there are many individuals who leave their wallets and purses and computers and many things of value in their car, and we end up taking reports. And that's consistent throughout wherever we go. But they make up a high percentage of the thefts and burglaries that you see. Overall, the village of Alloway is a great place to live. The crime rate is certainly low compared to other places, and our officers do a tremendous amount of time on crime prevention. And what I mean by that is they spend a lot of time checking businesses, parks, schools, and areas where people might park to go out at night and commit these crimes. So you'll see them constantly doing that, looking for suspicious vehicles, suspicious persons, and doing crime prevention techniques in order to prevent individuals from moving in this area as much as possible. And what I like to say is there's an analogy. It's kind of like having a garden, and you're doing weeding, If you can get out there a little bit more and pull some weeds, it prevents the garden in this area, the community, from being overtaken by the bad elements. And if you can get out there and be active to do that, that certainly helps. If I don't have any other questions about that, I wanted to talk about one last thing that Brad asked me to speak to you about, and it's kind of long, and that's about the contract. If you have any questions about that, I know we have some new trustees. Certainly I'm available to talk anything about the contract, any questions you have about it. But
can I just back up to the weeds for a second?
Sure.
So if Alloway, as the village, made a concerted effort to get people to lock their doors, there would be less time spent on the weed center just taking stuff out of cars, because it wouldn't be, I mean, you wouldn't have all those calls. So it would be in Alloway's best interest to find a way to help promote the idea of locking your cars and doors. So we need to figure out how to do that.
Absolutely, and we're trying to do what we can throughout Brown County. This is not an isolated incident. This is not isolated to Alloway. What these individuals are doing, and we've apprehended individuals doing this, there are groups that travel throughout Brown County, whether it be in the city of Green Bay, whether it be in Bellevue, Alloway, Chauvenon, De Pere, Howard, Suamico. They're typically a small group of individuals, maybe four, and they'll be responsible for 30 thefts or burglaries within maybe a one-week period, where they go on a period where they go for a period of time where they just stop in certain areas and they go through and check several blocks. They grab whatever they can, get in the vehicle, and move on to the next community. And they're continuously doing that. And when we apprehend them, we'll find that they'll have property from all over. Within the last 4 weeks, I came into work and our night shift was in there, and I knew what they had right away, because they had a whole pile of small items that they were sorting through, whether it be MP3 players, iPhones, wallets, purses, computers, and they were laying them all out, putting them into evidence, sorting through, looking in wallets to find out who the victim might be, if there's any personal identification on any of it, because they apprehended some suspects in the process of committing car thefts from cars, and then we have to go back and try to identify all of this property, which could be from one night, and it could be 15 different victims. It's a lot of time.
We found that on more than one occasion, Rick has told us, well, I can't do everything. You know, if you want to do neighborhood watch, that means I'm not going to be doing something else. So I think Trustee Dart's point is well taken. If the community can get involved, that means less of Rick's time that's spent on things like this, and more of his time that can be spent on the other initiatives that we have going for.
I was going to mention, directly related to that, one of the things we've talked about at one of our meetings, we took a cue from Green Bay. They have little cards they put on windshields, and I don't think it is their community service officers that are their paid employees go around and they check doors, and if they find a car door open, they leave a note on the person's car with a grade on it saying, "You failed, please lock your door in the future." So we've talked about doing that, and that's kind of a simple, proactive way of getting people's attention.
There's always some risk to doing those things. You start, and you can understand why you're sending CSI out, and all of a sudden they pull on car doors, and somebody wakes up because the alarm goes off, or they set it, or they were just so happened to be sitting in the dark watching TV, and now they see somebody walk up. So I'm always a little bit leery, and we've talked about this at length, and depending on which law enforcement officer you talk to, they think it's a good idea or maybe a potentially not so good idea, because it's just it takes one incident that goes wrong where you're like, why are you doing it? So we're looking at that issue, and I think before we come to a decision on that. I think we'd probably want to come back to the board and say, do you want law enforcement to do it? Would you want your community service officers to do that, or somebody else to do that? And if so, I think we would definitely want law enforcement to know that they're out there doing it on that day, so that if a call comes in, we would be able to say they're in this area doing it.
You know, I haven't left my wallet or my iPhone in my car unlocked, but I went over 200,000 miles, so I've left the keys in my car. And don't take it, sir.
Well, the good news, or maybe the bad news for you, is that Alloway has very, very few auto thefts.
Yeah, that's going to Green
Bay. Yes, sir.
You said that the speeding along Webster Avenue is an issue, primarily in Webster. Outside of a squad car sitting on the side of the street, it's slowing people down. One thing that I've noticed is very effective, especially when you're crossing the bridge over into De Pere, is the light that says you're going 35 and a 25. That's never me, but there's someone that does
that. Well, yeah, someone right next to you.
I'm doing 40.
We've done that in the individual streets in Alloway, and I think that does work. And then when you take the sign away, because we don't have enough signs to leave them permanently anywhere, then people go back to their old habits.
Are those expensive?
They're extremely expensive, the mobile ones.
Not the mobile ones, but the permanent ones.
The permanent one? I don't know the cost of a permanent one. We can look into that and find out. That might be an option. I know that the portable one that we move around, they are expensive. We have two of them, and we're certainly really cautious with them because we're always worried that somebody's going to damage it. It seems like oftentimes you put something out there and somebody has to, for whatever reason, damage it. Mm-hmm. So we make sure they're locked up so that they don't disappear and that somebody doesn't do that. But I think that would be something that we could look into and get that information to the village administrator so that we'd have an idea of the cost associated with that. And maybe depending on where it's located, find other sources to maybe look at trying to have somebody else put some pressure on some other people to cover the cost, depending if it's a county highway. Although, as you know, money's tight everywhere, but it certainly doesn't hurt for us to try to push that as well.
Perhaps those could be changed just a bit and say, next time it'll be a ticket across the top with the speed if they go over.
All right, should we move on to the contract?
Sure.
Okay. As far as the contract goes, the Village of Alloway is in the last year of the contract that started in 2012. And for 2015, there was an option to continue with a 1 year, which my understanding is the village has done. So we're in a situation where the contract for the police services for the Village of Alloway will expire at the end of 2015. So it's important that we have meetings about that, and I understand that you'll probably do an RFP and go through that process. I'm not really sure. That's certainly decisions that the board will make. But we're interested, certainly, to continue our relationship with the Village of Alloway. The Brown County Sheriff's Office has been doing the contracted services for the Village of Alloway since 1967, I believe. And we have certainly a lot of individuals within the Sheriff's Office that have put a lot of time and effort into Alloway, care tremendously about the village, and I would be honored to continue to serve the village. That being said, I think that we provide a very, very good service to the village at an incredible price. And I know that I've mentioned this before, but certainly I would like to mention it. For the new trustees that haven't seen, there is The Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance every year does a municipal facts form, and it talks about the cost of police services per capita. And you will find that contracting services is a very, very efficient way to do it, because what it allows for you to do is get the police officers on the street and at a very, very reasonable price, use the administration of an organization that would need administrators anyway, meaning the sheriff's office. So with the collaboration with all of the villages, I think everyone wins. Certainly the village wins, the county wins, all of the villages in the contract win. And that information is here. I'm not going to get into that, the specific amount, but it's very significant. And if you've seen it before, you know that. If you haven't and you want a copy of the book or the information from the book, I certainly can get that to you. And that's certainly based on the number of officers and a lot of other factors that go in it. But certainly collaboration and utilizing administration that already exists is a cost savings, and there's no doubt about it. Do I have any questions about the contract? Specific.
Just a guess?
Yeah, just in terms of the procedure, I can't remember how the ball started rolling back in 2012 when we started. I would assume that the Sheriff's Department will make some kind of a proposal to the village with the new numbers and the new projections, and then the municipalities have an opportunity to respond. Just in terms of process, or are we going to wait for something from the Sheriff's Department saying, hey, here's what we propose to be the new contractor, what's the protocol going to be?
Well, and that was kind of my question, and I think I would, with all of the villages, it just so happens that all of the villages, all of the contracts are coming up at the same time, which I think is a good thing, because we use a contract that is the same exact contract for every village, and if there's discussion about the contract and how it's laid out, I think from the Sheriff's Office perspective, we're going to use the same formula. We want to be able to use the same formula for every municipality that we're going to deal with, so that anyone who gets it would be able to plug in their numbers into the contract, how it's built, and get a fair assessment, a fair price for the services. Because I'm sure that every village is going to want it for a little bit less than the other village. So therefore, it's important that we have a structure that is set up, hopefully that every municipality understands and as much as possible agrees with. So that we can provide a fair price for everyone equally, depending on the service that they request. Our contract is very specific in the fact that it basically spells out a lot of information how we come to those numbers, as opposed to just saying, you know, this is roughly what we're estimating. We break it down, detailing how we came up with that number, the average wage of the patrol officers in the patrol division, number of hours, everything is spelled out. Is it perfect? I don't know. I don't know that you'll ever find a perfect system when you have so many things in the air, or so many things that can change, and that's why I think it's important to have that discussion, as you indicated, to outline what services the village is interested in having, what the expectations are, and then that would ultimately result in a price. The only reason I'm cautious to say to just give a number is if the Village of Alloway were to decide to go out for a proposal from another municipality, say the city of Green Bay or a city of De Pere or anything else, which certainly is an option. If I then give what we're going to do, what we'd be able to do the contract for, then it's possible, I suppose, that another municipality would say, well, we're going to do it for this much. And then I don't know that that would be fair to us.
I mean, at some point, you'll have to give a number.
So absolutely.
I know why you're not giving a number now, but to answer your question, Trustee Guest, in previous contracts, that's exactly what happened. They asked us, what kind of service do you want? We usually said same service, 24-hour service plus a DEO, you know, status quo, and then they come back with, all right, this is how much it's going to cost, broken down by as specifically as possible, and then we go from there. So,
well, and my major point with that is I'd like to see the structure and the numbers soon. I mean, I don't want to get to next September when our contract expires in December and be looking at your numbers, because that doesn't give us any flexibility.
And I absolutely 100% support that, because I have to have my budget done by the last week of July, believe it or not. I have to submit my budget to the county executive in early August every year, which is, I'm like halfway through, a little bit more halfway through. I don't even have all my numbers, and I have to prepare for 2015. So I support 100% us trying to lay out what we want to do. And I don't know if one of the things I'm considering is to have a meeting with all of the villages and talk about the contract as far as structurally what they like and what they don't like. Is there something, because from our perspective, I think it is important that the structure is similar for every village. Now, what each village may choose to put in the contract should absolutely be up to that village. If they want two DEOs, if they want a traffic officer, whatever that may be. But structurally, so that they understand, if you take this option, this is how much it's going to cost. Whether you're Alloway, Bellevue, Suamico, Howard, if you choose this, this is what we would have to get for.
Do you make recommendations on staffing levels for the individual villages? For example, based on 2014's numbers?
We certainly can, and we have. We just went through a presentation with the Village of Bellevue for their budget process. And in regular meetings just recently with the village administrator from Bellevue, looking at staffing and addressing that.
I don't think they'll have recommendations for us, because we're not growing. I mean, Bellevue's a little bit different, and the more people that populate the village, the more police service they're probably going to want. And they started out, I think, with 12-hour service years ago, or I mean, 16 hours, or 8 hours, I think it was, that when they first started, they 9 to 5, they had a police officer, and then they went without for the rest of the day.
Yep.
Right now, we're at 24-hour coverage with the DEO. I can't imagine us going any higher for any reason that I can foresee. And I can't imagine going lower, you know. I don't want to dip below a 24-hour patrol service, and I definitely want a DEO around, so.
Well, and I remember when we did the last contract, we studied it pretty extensively. We used to have two DEOs.
Yeah.
And we went down to one.
Yeah.
Because we thought that the village would be adequately protected and there would be enough preventative, and you know, a lot of villages budgetary, you know, because of the expense of it. And it's worked out very well. And it works out very well because we have a very good DEO that's committed. So.
But he's still stretched thin. Like I said before, we've mentioned more than once that, all right, if we want him to be working on neighborhood associations, it means he's not going to be working on, you know, drug houses or, you know, some other things. And he can't do everything, but I agree.
budgetarily, I don't think we can consider having another DEO.
And I think the report at the end of the year will help in that regard. And as I already indicated, I think for the most part, as the village president indicated, it has been pretty steady. I mean, we'll always have some ups and downs, and some of it we'll never be able to explain. That's the thing with crime. Sometimes you cannot explain it. Sometimes it's the economy and other things. Who knows? But the village has been very consistent, and I think that's a good thing, too. I mean, the fact that it would be different if we were concerned about the village of Alloway, but as I started it off, the village of Alloway is a great place to live, and it's a safe place. So I think in that regard, you should feel very comfortable with the services that you're providing.
I've always been happy with the services that we've gotten from the Brown County Sheriff. And the really nice thing is we are a safe community, and it's doing no small part to the village, you know, and what they expect, and the Sheriff Department doing what's expected of it. But the nice thing, and this is something I think that the board can work on, luckily, you know, the major work is traffic issues. I mean, it's speed and it's the crashes, and that's something that's just not a law enforcement function. Okay? I mean, it's a design function, as Jim alluded to before, with those signs. Mm-hmm. You know, we're redesigning, you know, Riverside Drive, and that could be maybe a component of that, because there's other ways to attack that problem rather than just a cop and a squad car. So I guess that's good news for us, is we can bring different resources to that problem. It doesn't have to be a squad car and a cop with a gun. So...
You had mentioned that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
You had mentioned that when you mentioned the $36 million budget, you kind of cringed, as if it's not enough money to do the job, and I'm sure that's probably the case. What change in your budget was from 2014 to 2015?
There was actually, for the most part, we didn't really have much of a change in our budget.
Okay.
My cringe is just a lot of money to manage. For me, I'm the person who handles it. My background, I have a master's degree in management and organizational behavior. My undergraduate's in criminal justice, so I feel very comfortable doing it. Mm-hmm. But it also is a daunting task. It's a lot of people, over 320 employees, a lot of moving parts.
So your budget's pretty flat from 2014 to 2015?
It is. Actually, the county board provided us with some additional resources. I had mentioned that earlier with Brown County. I'm an FBI National Academy graduate. I went in 2013. And when I came back, some of the things that I've... that were really initiatives that I really wanted to push forward were computer forensics and investigating that as well as crime analysis. And we're making very good strides in both of those areas. Our computer forensics and internet crimes against children is very, very good. We have a very competent person leading that, and we actually hired him from another law enforcement agency. I met with him, and it's a rare circumstance. Normally, when you start as a deputy at the bottom, and it's the first time in the history of the sheriff's office that we know of, and that goes back to, I guess, 1818. We've been around a long time before the state that we brought somebody in at a rank of a lieutenant to come right in, and he moved right into a leadership position, supervisor to head this up, and you've probably seen him on the news numerous times, Jim Valley. He's very, very knowledgeable about investigating computer crimes and doing computer forensics. We have that. Since that time, we have another investigator dedicated solely to that. In October, we got approval, and that was finalized in the budget, but we were moving along so fast that the public safety, the county board, authorized us two computer forensic civilian analysts who are specialized in computer skills going through computers, and they process getting all the data that we need as evidence for the computers for us, and then turn it over to our law enforcement so they can do the rest of it, the interviews and everything else that goes with it, so that we can prepare the case for the district attorney's office. And I think today we're probably about 200 hard drives behind already, and we've opened up a door to a lot of information, and investigators, other police officers now know if somebody has a smartphone and they committed a crime, and we can get that if we can get it either through a search warrant or through consent, we can get that smartphone, we can probably find everything that they've ever a lot of information off their or their computer or their iPad or any of that information. We have those resources, and we that unit that I'm very proud to have say that I was instrumental with the sheriff in bringing to Brown County. They're part of the FBI task force, so they've been brought in, and they're part of the FBI task force for that stuff. And in fact, we have technology that that we offer to the local FBI agents here in Green Bay to come to the sheriff's office to use, so they don't have to go down to Milwaukee to use it. And so we have a great relationship with the FBI here in Green Bay, and with many other agencies in regards to that. So
Todd, if you've got extra resources from the county and there's an escalator on most of the contracts at 2-3% a year, how is your budget for 15 not any higher than it was in 14?
We had savings in other areas, but as far as the contract goes, none of that, what I'm referring to, none of that includes, because you only pay an administrative fee on your part of the contract, so any of those resources has absolutely no impact whatsoever on the contract with the village. And when we go through that, you will be able to see that it's crystal clear that none of that would have any impact upon the village.
Right, but as far as it's going up 3% every year, and I'm assuming the other municipalities is as well, then that adds up to a budget being, if you're 3% more in 15 than you were in 14 from your partner, your municipal partners.
Right, no, totally. Because of the increases here, my budget ended up staying flat, because I have increases in, you know, gas and utilities and everything else. Overall, my budget remained basically the same. You know, certain things are up, certain things are down. So if contracted services ended up being an increase in revenue for the sheriff's office, we had offsetting increases in expenses somewhere else. So totally I ended up budgetarily about the same, other than what the county added in for positions. Hopefully that helps.
I can understand that if your expenses went up, yeah, you'd have to have more money to pay for it. But I think the question was, are you spending more money in 15 than you were in 14? Regardless of where the money's coming from, whether it comes from the county to pay for your expenses or whether it comes from the contracted services to pay for your expenses. Is that your question?
I think the good news is we don't have to worry about an increase for 2015.
Well,
just kidding.
It's built into the contract.
No, we're going into a new one, though.
For 2016.
I'm not sure you could say you don't have to worry about that. You have to negotiate, not worrying about that.
And I will tell you, I'm optimistic. I did a presentation with the Suamico Village Board. It would have been maybe 2 months ago, and I told them what I'm going to tell you is I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to hopefully not see as much as even 3%. I'm hoping that we can try to keep it as, and our goal is to try to keep it as low as we possibly can for you. I don't know what that is because I haven't plugged in the numbers, and I would be just guessing, but I think looking at it based on what I've just told you and everything else, I'm optimistic that we can, that we're doing a good job of managing our expenses so that we don't have to increase the expenses to the village. So if I could save money and doing other things throughout, that helps everyone. And that is, and I spend a lot of time trying to find any way I can to reduce our expenses, because I do know that it makes it easier, much easier on me when I come to you and I can tell you.
Easier to seal the deal if you've got a good number.
It is.
But some of these are outside of your control.
They are.
The insurance issue is just, right, it's getting crazy. All right, Trustee Harris, please.
Yes, sir.
A couple of questions, if I could. Do any municipalities that are contracted with Brown County, do they share resources? Let's say half a DEO, half time in one municipality and half time in another?
No, they currently do not.
Okay. Have you experimented with that?
I have not experimented with it, but there had been conversations a couple years ago. And I know that there had been conversations, I think, at least very preliminarily with Bellevue, possibly with Alloway, looking at a direct enforcement officer. And I know that that was very, you know, just brainstorming, very, you know, what would that look like in it, if that's possible. And certainly, we would entertain that. There do get to be some issues related to, you know, if you have, you know, how does the schedule work, and if this falls on that, do they owe time to Bellevue or Alloway? And that's my only concern to it, is having some clear guidelines about how that would work, but. I think that we would, if there was a municipality, two municipalities, whether it be Alloway and Bellevue, which in Alloway I think would probably be, if you're looking at that, my guess is that's the closest, that's something that we would look at.
I just didn't know how that did work, could work, if you had any experience with it. Part of my concern would be is if the person doing that job would be able to focus enough of their attention on, or, you know, split their time even mentally, going, okay, I need to focus on this village, then I need to focus on this village's concerns and issues. So I didn't know what history you had with that sort of thing. So.
But obviously, we have thought about that, and I will tell you, I'm not so concerned about that. The bigger concern would be if, you know, the scheduling and what happens if they end up in Alloway and a call that runs this long, and then do they owe time to Bellevue? And I'll be a little bit more concerned about having a good, sound understanding of that. But certainly, I would not be opposed to entertaining any of that, having any discussion about any of those things. I think one thing is that we try to be as flexible as we can with the municipalities that we contract with, so that we can meet your need the best that we can. And if we can do it, and we have a good understanding it's manageable for us, then I think we would certainly consider doing it.
Okay. And then, are the officers on the street, police officers and corrections, are they under the same union contract?
No.
Do they both expire at the same time?
No. Our correctional officers are not union.
Oh, they're not? Okay, I didn't know if they fell under with the Act 10 or not.
Well, no, and it's very litigious. in the fact that there's court rulings out there that talk about what the definition of a deputy is, and who knows, that may take a lot of time still to straighten up. But as it stands, with the courts set the way they are, unless something changes, and we're actually having hearings about that with our correctional officers now, they fall under Act 10, so they are not union. They could have a union, but certainly they would fall under Act 10. So as union, as you would say, similar to law enforcement, they're not.
Okay.
They are very, very separate for our correctional staff, so that's different.
Okay.
The only true union that we have would be our sworn law enforcement deputies, kind of going before Act 10. Similar to that, we only have one left, and that's our sworn officers, and they're protected.
Okay. I understood that part of it. I didn't realize corrections was not part of it.
And it depends. That's a great question, because it depends on every specific different sheriff's office, really, because you could have a... It just gets... Because some sheriffs have jailers that are armed and that could go out on the road. Ours are very, very specific. Jail civilian correctional officers, they do not have arrest authority, and they never carry a firearm. In fact, they have a different uniform. If you saw one of our correctional officers, they wear a blue uniform with the same patch, but it says above it as a rocker, it says corrections, where we have a uniform. I'm in my white uniform today because we had a ceremony. But otherwise, we have our typical brown uniform that I would wear, and we carry firearms, and so it's a little bit different.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't need a response to this. It's a huge question. You knew it was going to come, but as we approach the time to look at the contract, what will come up again, and we've talked about this for years now, I think the data collection's gotten a lot better. Quite a bit of a hiccup, I think, because the data wasn't really stored in the same spot with the sexual offender stuff and trying to collect information on that. And so, I understand the reasons why that wasn't as forthcoming as a lot of the other data reports that we get from VEO Lot now. So we really appreciated that. We've been asking for that for a long time, and now that you got some folks on board, that was their expertise, and that's was working out pretty well. But it will, when we enter into negotiations, what will inevitably come up is we'll want as detailed and itemized a list, and that whatever formula it is that you use to come up with the number, we'll want to see the formula, and people want to know where their money's going. And the double dipping thing, although Trustee Green is no longer on the board, her legacy lives on. The idea that we're paying for services that we already pay for through county taxes will come up, and so we'll have that discussion again of making sure that we're as comfortable as possible in knowing where every dime that we spend in this contract is going. And some of that's going to be indirect costs. So it won't just be Officer Lot now and the equipment and that. It will be, so what are we contributing to those types of services that if we didn't have our own, if we worked a village, we wouldn't have to pay for? Or what are we contributing to administration? Or so as detailed as you can get.
Absolutely.
Will definitely help.
Our goal is to be as transparent as possible. I think in the last 4 years, and certainly I've only been in my position 4 years, and it's been a learning process as we go. But one thing you will find is that I'm as transparent as it's going to get, and I've been with my budget as well, and I think that's been very beneficial for us as an agency. Because if any county board supervisor wants to go through any line of my budget, I'm willing to do it.
I don't think it was a matter of transparency. Accusing anyone.
No.
It's not uncommon, especially for public organizations, just not to cost things out like that. You're just not used to making sure that you have as part of your budget to keep the lights on in your building and to pay, you know, it's just sort of the basic direct costs of providing the services, and people oftentimes will forget about the indirect costs of running the business. So a lot of these are legitimate costs. We just want to know where they are. And I think in previous administrations, you know, 5-10 years ago, when I first came on the board 9 years ago, I just don't think they were building that into their budgets. They had no idea what percent of what we gave in our contract to the Brown County Sheriff's Office is actually going to these ancillary services and the overhead to support the services that you're providing to us. So it wasn't a matter that they were hiding anything. I just don't think they knew the answer to the question. The budgets weren't set up that way, and the data collection wasn't run that way. So, any other questions or comments? Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you staying so late.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And like I said, if anyone has any questions, I have my business cards. And additionally, if anyone would ever at any point want to come up to the sheriff's office, see the facilities, see the computer forensics, see any of the stuff that we have, I would gladly do that for any of you. So
definitely close enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If I may, I just hope that tonight, with having both the fire department and the sheriffs here, was an opportunity to one, to get to know some of the new trustees, but to get a good feel for what relationships that we do have between the two organizations as well. We've got a lot of work to do in the near future. Looking forward to working with Todd and the rest of the sheriff's department, and as well as the fire department. We do have a great relationship started. It dates back many years. We're getting that relationship now with the Green Bay Fire Department as well. I think we're on the right track. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, we'll move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak? Yes, sir.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'd just like to request that the various committees that the village has have a email address that the public can send requests and comments to. We have various members, and I don't know who represents me with regards to specific topics, so I end up going to a lot of different meetings, and it'd be easier for me to just send a question to that committee and then just get a response back from them. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have the email addresses of the chairs of the committee?
There are their personal ones.
They're their personal ones, okay. So we'll have to talk about the logistics of that. I don't see anyone else visiting, so I don't imagine we'd have any further public appearances. Moving on to item 6, we'll take items 6A through E together unless there are objections. Is there a motion with regard to items 6A through E, the consent agenda? Trustee Gant.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Trustee Dart.
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Is there a motion to adjourn? Trustee Dart, second by Trustee Rafter. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're adjourned. Okay.